Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. You ain't gonna be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economic. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry and put that pools in your money and hold that money and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for at least. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations got the money. That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk only control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75, 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. And so you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You know, you only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March for what? Who cares? Marching, they never changed anything.
Out. Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
But you say, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, shoot it! So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again, this time on the near side, for another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarian Stiles, the kid no one would pick, was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No. Nope.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
It is morning in the Westgate Conservancy in Kenya. Inside her traditional boma, Netema Laleitu is preparing food, helping her children get ready for school. She is a member of the Samburu, an ethnic group of pastoralists among many different groups who live on this managed land in the country's north. Netema is one of four wives, a mother of five children. The older ones will take the half-hour walk to the schoolhouse, past wild animals that have wandered into the area from the adjoining national park. Samburu families have been living in this region for generations, but the school is something new. It started 8 years ago with just a handful of boys. Now there are more than 240 students, almost half of them girls. The school is a symbol of hope, and hope is needed because life here is hard. And in some ways, it is getting harder. Herding can be a difficult and costly way of life. Take this goat eating scarce grass. Most Samburu keep their wealth in livestock instead of banks. Think of this goat as money. While money can just sit in the bank, this goat eats almost non-stop. Since it's a form of currency, it may not be killed for food, but allowed to graze for years, destroying the environment. It used to be that there was land enough to spare, but now there are more Samburu competing for restricted space. This is Netema's husband, Thomas Laleitu.
Kake kore pe kore da na ngamata ni ko tu
Hungry Samburu livestock wander into the nearby national park and eat food reserved for Africa's iconic animals, which bring in much-needed tourist revenue. That pits the needs of the Samburu against a precious resource that benefits all Kenyans. With less grass, the quality of land inside and outside the park has been getting worse. The range is overgrazed. A particularly invasive type of acacia is growing rampant. Because of climate change, the rainy seasons are shorter and unpredictable. But change is on the horizon. Thomas is one of many herders working to improve the situation. It is a multi-step process. Damage is limited by grazing the cattle of multiple families together, a practice known as bunch herding. No gray zones are set aside to allow land to recover. Herders are given jobs as rangers, earning an income to patrol and protect their homeland. Invasive acacia is being ripped out and replaced with seeds to grow more grass. And finally, cattle are sold at a new local market, so they don't have to be herded over vast distances to the slaughterhouse, destroying land along the way. Women too are part of the project. Thomas's wife Netemu joins with others to make traditional beadwork jewelry and trinkets. These items will be sold in the Kenyan capital, Nairobi. The work gives their families an extra source of income, lessening the dependence on livestock. It also gives the women choices. Netemu uses her profits to buy food and clothes and books for her children. At school, the next generation is learning English and how to do math. It's hoped these skills will help them get jobs and opportunities beyond the conservancy. There will be less livestock, but more prosperity. It is a delicate balance between a traditional way of life and a better future.
Soon when I was graduating, I just saw the boy lying there. His clothes were soiled with blood. Yes.
Do you know where the police shot him?
Yes, after the post-mortem, the doctor told us that he had 4 bullets around the chest and 1 which passed here.
He's been shot 5 times.
Yes.
To be honest, I'm not much of a crier, but I've seen some really horrible things in my life.
This is Carlton Miner at a TED Talk in 2016, talking about what it's like to grow up in Kibera, Africa's largest slum. In the shadow of Nairobi's wealthy city centre, it houses over 280,000 of the nation's poorest people, with most of those living on the 610-acre site, earning on average 78 pence a day. In the slum, violent crime is high and access to healthcare and education is limited. 23-year-old Miner was a straight-A student. Having been awarded a scholarship, he studied at the University of Leeds in the UK. In the early hours of the 21st of December 2018, Miner and his friends were approached by 2 armed officers just a few hundred yards from his home in Kibera. He was chased by police, cornered, and then gunned down.
You allege that they planted a fake gun on
yes,
him,
yes.
And that's their excuse for shooting him.
They will automatically do that when they kill a person.
Is that something you've heard happening before?
It is usually that way here in Kenya. It is usually that a policeman will never shoot you, then just say that he shot you for nothing. He'll just find something to implant on you.
What are the police in Kibera like? How do they treat the people?
Let's give an example. It's me with you, yeah. And I have a grudge with you, and maybe I want you to to be eliminated, or just to go through the policeman and maybe give him something small, then he will just do the whatever I want him to do, maybe to eliminate you or something of the sort.
Is that the normal life in Kibera? Is that just the way it is, that the police are as bad as the criminals?
I'd say it so, yes.
In the days following Miner's shooting, friends and residents took to the streets, demanding justice and calling for an end to extrajudicial killings, deliberate unlawful killings by state agents, namely individual police officers who act without following due process. The people of Kibera are no strangers to the use of force. Post-election violence in 2007 and 2017 saw many casualties as crowds clashed violently with police. Seeking to build bridges, Kenya's police have introduced a new approach, a community engagement program aimed at resolving problems at grassroots levels.
Good morning. My name is Inspector Nick Sulue. I want to believe most of you know me. Open up, be free, tell us what affects you, so that this meeting would be meaningful.
Here, police attend open forums where the community voice their concerns. On the agenda today, crime, corruption, and the killing of Carlton Miner.
Miner was not a thief. Miner had to go on anything, he didn't need anything. But the police that shot Miner, and he was carrying so bit of fake, gun fake, but she shot him. To us, just killing us.
When police officers raid a place, they go to raid, wameamua sasa tunaenda ku raid mahali, trust me, they are not wrong, na iko waalifu pale. And normally when we come, they open fire. Are we supposed to run away? No, we don't run away. We fire back. Trust me, if we don't kill these people, they will kill you.
As we spend more time in Kibera, locals tell us stories about the police, accusing officers of corruption, rape, and murder.
So, this is the scene of one of the shootings, yeah?
Yes.
Gabby Ressa is an anti-gun activist. He takes us to the scene where his friend Kevin was allegedly killed by police. 2 years earlier, Kevin had handed in his firearms, but had drifted back into crime. Yet again, we hear the allegation of police fabricating evidence by planting a gun on the victim to justify the shooting.
They were all aiming to shoot. Then Kevin was trying to run. It's like bullet was hitting him before reaching here. 7 times. And he came and he lost his life in that point.
Just a few hundred feet away, Gab leads us to the scene of yet another fatal shooting.
This is where the shooting was.
Here, it's alleged that plainclothes officers carrying out an early morning raid in search of a suspect enter a house where they find 3 young men. Handcuffed, they were forced to lie face down on the ground and threatened. After completing the search of the house, the officers release 2 of the men. The third they kill, shooting him 3 times. Hearing the gunfire, Gab left his house and spoke to one of the 2 men who had been released.
So when I saw the young men, he was like scared and looked traumatized. Then I told him, what's wrong? He was like, they've killed him for no reason. He was just saying, in Swahili, wamemua, wamemua, wamemua. That's killing, killing, killing.
Walking through Kibera with the local police, there's relative calm, but also an underlying feeling of tension.
One thing you do notice here is that you're able to walk around, patrol. The crowd seem really friendly towards you.
Yes. Yeah.
But from what I've been told, it can change at drop of a hat. Can
exactly.
You explain that to me?
Yes. Right now, if we could have a problem right now, as I'm talking to you, over 300 people would come against us.
They outnumber us, they come violent, they throw stones and all that.
So you're faced with a crowd of 300 throwing things at you. What will trigger or cause an officer to discharge a weapon?
Normally we discharge because they throw stones at us.
Right. We just discharge and into the air again.
What happens if there's someone in the crowd shooting at you? What happens then?
Under the law, then I'm allowed to shoot back.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
How do you then target someone? You find out someone's a burglar, someone's house breaking. What do you then do?
We approach that person. And if the person stays with their parents, we talk to their parents. So we tell them, could you please talk to your son or daughter to deviate from this behavior, or we'll take action. And when we catch up with you, we do the necessary. I wouldn't mention that.
You won't mention that? Okay. I noticed that all your officers are carrying assault rifles. Is there a need for that in Kibera?
Yeah, there's a need for that because some of them are armed.
Yeah.
Some of these gangs are armed. We've had like 10 cases of our officers being gunned down by these criminals.
The police may well be trying to stop crime, but there is resistance from within the gangs.
Exactly.
And they target the police just as much as the police target
They retaliate.
The problem of extrajudicial killings is happening across the country, and 2018 saw a nationwide spike. The Kenyan government is making an effort to tackle the problem. Officers have been arrested, but there are still more than 5,000 allegations of misconduct waiting to be investigated. None of the cases we've come across in Kibera have seen police officers brought to justice.
Our society is extremely unequal, and that's what produces violent crime. Increasingly, what we're seeing is that those circumstances are now being met with violent policing. From 2018 was just over 200 cases of young men were shot in suspicious circumstances.
Do you feel that the people of Kenya are perhaps afraid of the police?
We did an opinion poll just at the end of last year, and one of the institutions that citizens fear most, or rather have least confidence in, is the police. And that's the place that people go for protection. So you have this very sad, ironic situation that the institution that we go to for protection is the very institution that we're most frightened of.
Standing here outside Kibera police station. We were intended to speak to the superintendent in charge of police in Kibera about corruption, about the things we've learnt, about the shootings. He's unwilling to speak to us because he wants payment. That payment is not an administration fee. It's to go into his own pocket, so therefore we're not prepared to pay. The investigation into Carlton Miner's death is still ongoing, and it could be years before the evidence is considered by a court. Although authorities have identified the officer who shot Miner, he has not been suspended and is still on active duty, carrying a firearm. Since her son's death, Josephine has continued to fight for justice. Unprotected by the authorities, she has to suffer anonymous text messages, warning her that if she doesn't leave Kibera, she will be killed. Where is your mind at the moment?
You can see I'm totally confused. Right now I fear everything in Kibera. I'm just feeling unsafe. My family is there. I can't move. My mother just stays there. I have a sister there. So I don't know. Kibera is becoming miserable to me.
Are you hopeful that the men who shot your son will be brought to justice?
I can say I'm just hoping that they will give justice to me, because I know for really Khalid died for nothing. I don't have so much. I don't have money to go and giving it out for justice. But I know one thing. I know is that God is going to give me justice. Yes.
There is no devil. The devil is the police. That's why we call them beasts.
The slums of Nairobi, dead bodies of young poor men, are turning up on the streets almost every day. It's an underground war against crime. The community, experts, and insiders say they are executed by the police, without charges, without trial, because they are allegedly criminals. One of them was Brian. This is his story.
Alikuwa mpole na mtu wa kufurahia, mtu wa kumake fun.
Mama Bryo has lost her son, Brian, 19 years old, executed while having lunch. It's been 2 days and it still all feels like a terrible nightmare.
Hey, let's get pictures. How much?
This is where Brian was sleeping just a few days ago. The police suspected him of being a criminal, a thief, but Mama Bryo says he was innocent.
Alikuwa mtu wa heshima, hakuwa mtu wa vita vita, alikuwa tu mtu wa kupenda kuongea na kufurahia na watu. Sasa wanauanga watu innocent, watani watoto si watu wakubwa. Youth.
Brian had aspired to become a reggae artist. It's day 4 after Brian's death. Mama Bryo has to go to the city mortuary for his autopsy. Filming is officially forbidden. The smell is pungent. 20 to 50 corpses arrive here every day, almost all killed by police. For Mama Bryo, it's still all surreal. Joyce was Brian's friend and neighbor. Here in her community in Kayole is where he was killed. Joyce says he was executed in broad daylight, along with his 3 friends.
So, we ran toward this way, and we found that our 4 boys were killed here. One was lying here, here, and the other 3 were inside. I heard they came to cook lunch and they were gunned down. The policeman was the one who gunned them down. Can you enter?
The community is still shocked about what they say was a brutal execution by a police killer squad. Three of the men died in here.
The family has burned everything so that the rooms can be empty.
Back home, Joyce shows us another chilling piece of evidence. The images of Brian and his dead friends broadcast on Dandora Crime Free, one of the many Facebook pages that support extrajudicial killings. Joyce says the police themselves post the pictures to instill fear and label the victims as armed, violent criminals.
I saw they were my friends, like brothers to me. Yeah. And it hurt me a lot.
Here in the slum, the community says the police are slaughtering an entire generation.
That's why we always keep quiet. There are so many guys who have been killed, but we can't say anything. Yeah.
The independent medical legal unit IMLU in Nairobi. Dr. Brian Bichanga is a forensic expert. For him, cases like Brian's are part of a larger pattern.
Being poor in Kenya is almost a death sentence.
you're more likely to die from the police than from the criminals. The whole scenario where there's a lot of crime, the police are trying to fight crime, that gives you a recipe for some of these extrajudicial killings.
The executed are overwhelmingly young men, and they are poor, like Brian. The police call them criminals. The police claim the victims were caught stealing or attacking their offices, but for Dr. Bichanga, the corpses tell a different story.
Entry wounds to the back, entry wounds to the head, entry wounds to the chest. The main objective of anyone who's trying to shoot you in the back, in the head, and in your chest is not to immobilize you, it's to execute you.
We reached out to the office of the Inspector General for an interview several times. We also contacted IPOA, the police's independent oversight authority, for an official statement. Both repeatedly denied DW requests for interviews in person. One officer inside the system, however, is willing to uncover the doings of Nairobi's police, but only anonymously. He fears he would otherwise be killed as well. He wants to be called modern cop and says he's against extrajudicial killings like that of Brian.
Extrajudicial killings happen almost every other day. Everybody knows that there are extrajudicial killings.
It's impossible to give the exact figures, but modern cop guesses about 10 people are executed in Nairobi slums every day. That would make it more than 3,500 police murders per year.
So the procedure is, as a cop, you're given an order. You don't know where the order comes from. You're told, hey, this is what's happening. And now it's time to shoot, to kill. And then you go, you land. Within that process, if you don't get the right guy, you'll end up killing the wrong guy. And if you get the right guy, you also kill the right guy, without prosecution, and nobody cares.
For many police, the otherwise vibrant life in the slum is deemed worthless. Outside the affected neighborhoods, in the rest of the country, most killings are not reported or are downplayed. Crime is rife, the prisons are full, and no one remembers how the extrajudicial killing started in the first place. Modern cop explains the truth behind the posted photos of dead corpses. He says that firearms are placed next to the victims by the police to show they were armed.
You will have to at least find a way to place a fake pistol and retaliate and say that the guy was also armed. You go do your thing. But at the end of the day, the concept is you must make the police look good, however bad it is. So having fake guns on criminals, that's true.
The police insist their victims, including Brian, are all criminals. And a friend of Brian says, yes, they were in a gang, but those times are long over. They gave up crime and even surrendered to the police last year. To conceal his identity, we'll call him Amos.
They shouldn't have killed Brian. We had changed for real. For real. If there's an investigation, they should do their investigation. Isn't that right? There are jails. Who were they built for? Dead bodies? Are dead bodies taken to jail?
Amos is but one example of a former criminal who now lives with a target on his back, despite pursuing a life of reform. Fear and censorship mute all official counts of extrajudicial killings. Local media reports, as of August 2017, that the latest number of police executions is a little over 100 in 1 year.
In 1 year, 100 people only? There's nothing like that. 100 people are dying within 3 days. 100 people are dead within 3 days.
Amos has lost his friend Brian and says he knows the police will come for him next.
I'm the one on their hit list now. I'm not fearful because it's gotten to the point where they even kill innocent people. The day I die is the day I will be happy, because I will no longer have to suffer these struggles. But my prayer to God is that I do not die before the truth is told.
It's day 15 since Brian's death. His mother, his family and friends lay him to rest in his rural area. They lament that Brian, like so many other young men, was stripped of judicial process and his human rights, his life and death devalued. Thousands of extrajudicial killings in Kenya have been covered up and unreported, personal tragedies hidden beneath the guise of police success. It's a sad certainty that Brian wasn't the last young man they'll bury in Nairobi, Kenya.
In Kiambu, a town just outside Nairobi. This is the second tragedy visited on the family within a month. Steps from his own grave lies the body of his 17-year-old son, Stephen Gachuru, who was gunned down by police in a Nairobi slum in May. Stephen's brother, Mwangi, says his father died from a broken heart.
Baba.
My father really loved Stephen because he was the first son who offered to come and stay with him in Kiambu. So losing that love is what has killed him. Stephen Gachuru's case highlights a troubling trend in Kenya. Young men killed by the police for petty crimes rather than being arrested or charged. A study by the nonprofit organization, the Independent Medico-Legal Unit, or IMLU, found more than 1,200 people were shot dead by police in Kenya in a period of just 5 years. By contrast, only 259 gun deaths were caused by armed robbers. Stephen Gachuru's life came to an end here in the Kiamaiko neighborhood, where crime and unemployment run rampant. Police say he started robbing and stealing. But there was another side to Stephen, the acrobat. Here he is in red, performing with a Kenyan troupe during a visit to Taiwan. The family says this was the real Stephen, not the thug the police said he was. His sister-in-law, Ruth Mumbi, a human rights defender who has led the charge on the case, says police pressure forced Stephen to leave the neighborhood.
He had left the community for a couple of months after he was threatened by the police. They forced him to move out of Kiamaiko, or rather, if he does not move, they are going to kill him, because they had said there were some allegations that they were saying that he is among the criminal grouping.
But during a visit to pick up some electrical wires, he had his final run-in with the police.
But the police officers went ahead and said that we told you, we warned you that anywhere we are going to come across you, we are going to kill you, and today it's your day.
A police report said Stephen was involved in a robbery with two other men armed with machetes. The report says two plainclothes police officers confronted them and Stephen was shot dead. A stolen phone was recovered along with 3,000 Kenyan shillings, worth about $35. No weapons were found. An autopsy conducted by the nonprofit IMLU showed Stephen was shot three times and showed no signs of resistance.
I think it's very clear from the postmortem and from the conclusion of the pathologist is that there was no evidence that he tried to struggle or he was armed in any way.
Family says Stephen was pleading for his life when he was killed.
The question that we are asking, why is the police taking the law in their hands, and yet we have institutions, we have judiciary. Why are they not like arresting these kids, even if they are saying that they are criminals, to get a deeper understanding? Why are they getting into crime?
Police say they have filed an internal inquiry on the case, but the story is not unique, and these cases rarely see a courtroom. Across Kiamaiko, as in other parts of Kenya, families continue to grieve for the young lives taken by those who had sworn to protect them. Gabe Joslo, VOA News, Nairobi.
Children play in a dirt alley in Nairobi's Kibera slum. It's also where police allegedly shot and killed two teenage boys. Bilal Ali's family says the boy and his friend had done nothing wrong, and while they know the identity of the police officer allegedly responsible, they say there's nothing they can do.
They have killed nearly 300 children. Every time he kills a child, he places a gun next to the victim and claims they had a gun on them. Our child was sick and was sleeping. He received a call from his friend and left to join him, and he was shot.
This community is angry and scared, saying police are killing more people than ever before.
In the last 3 years, only one police officer in Kenya has been successfully prosecuted and imprisoned for an unlawful killing. Here in Kibera, people say the police officers allegedly responsible for similar deaths continue to patrol the streets.
The Kenyan Police Service refused to speak to Al Jazeera, but issued this statement on Twitter denying the killings. In the coastal city of Mombasa, Sada Suleiman last saw her husband 2 years ago. She says he disappeared after being arrested in a police raid at a local mosque.
I have many questions still unanswered. They took him and they claimed they don't have him. We don't know where else to turn because it's the police who arrested him, and they refute those claims.
Sada believes her husband is dead. Human Rights Watch says Kenyan security forces have forcibly disappeared at least 34 people in the past 2 years during counter-terrorism operations. A newly established media database, The Nation Newsplex, says 122 people have been killed in the first 8 months of this year. That's more than 7% higher than during the same period last year. Police have not explained why 68% of these shootings occurred.
Denial doesn't help. They need to acknowledge that there's a serious crisis within the police service of misuse of firearms. In majority of cases, no investigations are done. Actually, what we find is very high levels of cover-up within the police service.
Most of the killings have happened in poor and marginalized communities. People like Sada and the Ali family say they feel powerless, making their pain more difficult to bear. Famida Miller, Al Jazeera, Nairobi.
When you mention Mathare, Kayole and Dandora, most Nairobians would automatically associate these areas with poverty and high levels of crime. In fact, these neighborhoods are often accused of breeding criminals who then in turn make doing business in Nairobi Central Business District a nightmare. Police have responded to these levels of crime in the way they feel is most effective, and that's violently. They've often been accused of weeding out and killing suspected criminals. And now there's a new trend online. Boys and young men, mainly aged between 15 and 26, are killed, and photographs of their dead bodies posted online by Facebook accounts claiming to be run by police officers. I've been following cases of extrajudicial killings for the last 7 years, and the number of those killed every year is rising. Grassroots organizations claim that in the last 5 years, the number of those killed violently in Dandora, Kayole, and Mathare alone currently stands at 805. A familiar silence has engulfed the narrow corridors of Mathare settlement. Residents whisper of the latest deaths here. They claim two young men were gunned down in a dark alley, allegedly by police officers. We try to speak to witnesses, but they're too afraid to give their accounts on camera. Elias has agreed to take us to the murder scene. He tells us that one of the victims was his cousin. Nicholas was his name.
Askari mmoja alishuka na bunduki after kusimamisha gari, kupaki gari. Akashuka mbio mbio, akakuja, nikasikia alisimama pale wa kwanza. Na huyo mwingine naye akatoka kama amewashika vijana. Askari mmoja akakuja akashutu mmoja, akanini, akaatiliwa mwingine, huyo mwingine akarushiwa mwingine na huyo akashutu huyo mwingine sasa. Alafu akakuja wakaegeza gari pale ndio watu wasione. Alafu akaanza kuhipo watu akifukuza watu waende.
This young man is the last person to have spoken to Nicholas before he was killed. He is too afraid to reveal his identity and asks us to protect him. He says when he heard that his friend had been picked up by people claiming to be police officers, his first reaction was to call his phone.
Nilisikia niko akipoa orders, zima hiyo simu, na nikasikia kofi. Sikuweza kutulia, nikabidi nimpigie tena. Sasa pengine vile niko alikuwa in cold blood, angeweza kuongea tena. Alipiga simu, ikakaa yani, nasikia kile kitu vile inaendelea, lakini nikasikia kwa motion, wako kwa gari, lakini haongei, lakini nasikia askari wakiongea. Nikaikata kupiga tena, tena nikawa kwa mteja.
Huyo kijana alikuwa anafanya kazi NYS, na anapitaga hapa. Hata kama...
The news has spread all over the neighborhood, sparking raw emotions and revealing a deep-seated concern from the residents.
Tunamuomba hata kama nyinyi ni watu wa serikali, tafadhalini shikeni watoto, pelekeni polisi, pelekeni kotini, akipatikana na hatia afungwe.
Kila mara akikuja hapa wanakuja wakiwa revi. Juzi walikuwa wanatandika watu na mafimbo.
Na unasema akikuja, kwa nini mmoja anajulikana?
Mmoja ndio big fish.
Anaitwa?
Si unasikia? Unajua mimi ni mtu wa kutembea, nikienda ataweza nipata kwa barabara.
The man they speak of first came into public eye in early 2017 when this amateur video filmed in Nairobi's Eastleigh area went viral on social media. Said to be a plainclothed police officer, the man identified later as Rashid is seen pumping several bullets into a young man's body. It was later reported that the victim was a notorious gang member.
90% of them have been committed by Rashid.
Today in Mathare, Rashid has become a household name, for all the wrong reasons.
Mathare Social Justice Center has been documenting cases of extrajudicial killings. Their field officer, JJ, says there's a pattern to the killings here. And almost always, Rashid's name comes up.
All the boys he kills, mostly in Mathare, you'll find that the least bullet you'll count from 5 upwards. 10, 20, 15 bullets in the body.
A few minutes from Mathare, in Kayole area, Baba Tony shows us the spot where his son's body was discovered just 2 weeks ago. Rashid is not prominent here, but another famous name rings louder.
He's Wadandora.
He tells us he found out about his son's death via a Facebook page purporting to be run by a police officer.
Vile tulikuja kupeleleza, tulisikia mpaka alikuwa amepigwa pingu. Hata kuuliwa aliuliwa akiwa na pingu, na ndiye akaletwa huko nyuma.
Hesi's reputation has spread like wildfire in Dandora and Kayole. Residents say that many young men have gone into hiding for fear of being profiled as criminals. We meet two 19-year-olds who tell us they've been warned by Hesi through his Facebook page. They've now been in hiding for 2 months.
And Salmiya Samson alafu mwambie the battle is still going on. Naona. Rami after hapo nikatoka na aliniambia on Saturday itafika. On Saturday ilikuwa tarehe 12 hapo. Akaniambia itafika kama mtu mmoja ajeuliwa.
Sasa hiyo kipostiwa kwa internet hapo kwa Lake Free. Hakuna pale nimeenda. Osha kufa. Wana tumia informa. Wako nao wengi wewe ndio pale. Hata nikienda anga huko wanashapigiwa simu tu sisi kawa na wanasema mimi na mtoto wangu anga kukula.
Some parents, like this mother who agreed to speak with us on condition of anonymity, have had to send their sons into hiding after threats were issued against them.
Mimi niko ready hata kumpeleka anywhere. Mimi najua mtoto wangu si mwarifu. Niko ready, very much ready. Akafesiane nao mapolisi. Na pia maisha yake juu saizi mtoto wangu hata hawezi tembea.
It's a normal weekday at the Kenya National Commission on Human Rights. Elias has come to report his cousin's death. He wants a case opened against the police in Mathare. The commission says it receives such complaints almost daily. In one of their boardrooms, about half a dozen young men from one of Nairobi's informal settlements are here to report death threats allegedly by police officers. But the commission can only do so much.
This increase in the number of abuse of firearms by the police. So when the young men come here and report to us, we do what we have to do, investigate the veracity of their claims, forward this to IPOA. But then from there, we really hope that the law should be able to take its course. And that is where we've always hit the biggest snag.
The Independent Policing Oversight Authority, tasked with checking police excesses, received more than 9,000 complaints against police. But the authority managed only 4 convictions in a period of 6 years. Currently, IPOA still awaits a new team as the tenure of its officials came to a close earlier this year.
The final call is made by the DPP. Ours is to investigate, provide the file to the DPP. He decides.
So far, we have been told even names of police officers who are suspected to be involved in the killings have been brought to our attention, just like they've been brought to IPOA's attention, just like they've been brought to the attention of other actors like IMLU. And therefore, because nothing seems to be happening to these known police officers who have been mentioned, we have reason to believe that there could be some sort of very tacit approval of the actions.
We reached out to the police leadership on these allegations, but did not get a response. Previously, Vigilance House has stressed that they do not condone extrajudicial killings.
It's not that we do not know or don't acknowledge the fact that there are
continental, regional, as well as universal standards. To, for instance, human rights there, we are fully cognizant of that fact. But everything must be done in context.
It is not fair for blanket condemnations or blame on the police. When individual cases have to be investigated, I promise you, as a Ministry of Interior, we will work with you. We will cooperate. We will do what we are required to do to ensure that the right thing is done as we go forward.
Even though the residents we spoke to in Mathare, Kayole and Dandora are condemning these killings, many online appear to be supporting Hesi in his quest to wipe out suspected criminals. A survey in 2018 by the Kenya National Bureau of Statistics reveals that extrajudicial killings have done little to improve security in Nairobi. In 2017, Nairobi reported 7,434 cases of crime compared to 4,954 cases reported in 2016. Extrajudicial killings in Kenya have become so perennial that they are now viewed as normal urban life. A report by Amnesty International in 2016 named Kenya as the leader in extrajudicial killings in Africa. But as the number of those killed continues to rise, residents of Nairobi's poorer neighborhoods are left waiting for justice and protection. Asha Mwilu, Citizen TV, Nairobi.
And we continue with the latest on the investigation into George Floyd's death. The medical examiner and an independent autopsy both concluding his death was a homicide, but disagreeing about the exact cause of death. Alex Perez is in Minneapolis with that side of the story for us. Good morning, Alex.
Good morning, Robin. Yeah, there are some differences in those autopsies, but they both agree that George Floyd was deliberately killed. His younger brother visited the memorial here to honor George and pay his last respects.
Overnight, new details on George Floyd's tragic death. His family releasing the results of an independent autopsy. His death, a homicide, asphyxia, suffocated due to neck and back compression. The weight on him, the handcuffs, and that position seen in that horrific video, all contributing to his death.
The autopsy shows that Mr. Floyd had no underlying medical problem that caused or contributed to his death. He was in good health.
The Hennepin County Medical Examiner releasing its official autopsy results Monday evening, also ruling it a homicide, but saying Floyd died of a heart attack complicated by law enforcement restraint and neck compression. Floyd's family now calling for the immediate arrest and charge of the three other officers seen in that disturbing video and demanding first-degree murder charges be brought against the former officer Derek Chauvin.
By continuing to mount the pressure on his body, restricting his airway and cutting off blood to his brain, they knew that they would cause death.
I was by Floyd's younger brother Terrence's side as he visited the makeshift memorial. Moments later, wailing in agony, silencing the crowd as he, for the first time, saw the spot where his brother took his last breaths. And choking back sobs as he spoke to his brother.
I need you and Pops to watch over me.
The 46-year-old, known to his friends as Big Floyd and as a gentle giant, who in second grade dreamed of being a judge on the Supreme Court. His brother passionately calling for the violence and destruction to stop.
I understand y'all upset. But like it was already said, I doubt y'all half as upset as I am. So if I'm not over here wilding out, if I'm not over here blowing up stuff, what are y'all doing? Y'all doing nothing, because that's not going to bring my brother back at all.
Encouraging people to vote to make a change.
Let's do this another way. Let's stop thinking that our voice don't matter.
That's right.
And vote.
There you go.
Not just vote for the president, vote for the preliminaries, vote for everybody. Educate yourself! Educate yourself! Don't wait for somebody else to tell you who's who.
Leading the crowd with a rousing tribute to his big brother.
What's his name?
George Floyd!
What's his name?
George Floyd!
And as the world waits to see if those other three officers involved will be charged, the president of the police union here issuing a statement saying all four officers were terminated without due process, and he will fight for their jobs. Amy?
Alex Perez, thank you for that. Joining us now is Minnesota Attorney General Keith Ellison, who is now the lead prosecutor in the George Floyd case. Attorney General, thanks for being with us. And given the results of this independent autopsy, which appear to contradict the medical county examiner, obviously both of them ruling it a homicide, but asphyxiation versus a heart attack, does this change anything for you? Will you consider a more serious charge like first-degree murder?
We are considering all charges. They're all on the table. I got appointed Sunday night, got the file yesterday. We are pouring through it as fast as we can. There are numerous videos, numerous witness statements, a lot of stuff to go through for us to do due diligence. But we're not going to prolong this any longer than is absolutely necessary to do that due diligence. And we're moving expeditiously, yet we have to move carefully. I know that's unsatisfying to people. They want what they want immediately. And of course, people have waited too long and have been too patient over the years. But this case must be done methodically, and we are doing that right now. But there's nothing off the table. All of the facts that we're mustering, including any medical information, including autopsy reports, are factors in the work that we are doing right now.
So many people who have watched that video have said that it speaks for itself, that this is a slam dunk case, that prosecuting this shouldn't be difficult. But you've said that prosecuting police misconduct is exactly that. It's very hard. How so? Why?
Well, first of all, you know, generally jurors resolve all doubts in favor of the police. The system is such, there are certain immunities police have. There are certain presumptions. There's relationships that police have that have established over the course of years. And the fact is, if you just look at the Freddie Gray case, people looked at that video and were quite certain that there needed to be a conviction. No one was. Same thing in the Rodney King case, Simi Valley verdict acquit. And then we all know about the Philando Castile case here in Minnesota not too long ago. And, of course, the Walter Scott case ended in a hung jury. The fact is these cases are not easy, and anybody who says they are has never done one. So we're working quickly, and we're making sure that every link in the prosecutorial chain will be tight, and we are proceeding forward with the justice in mind.
We have all seen what's happened throughout this country over the past several days and nights, and the calls for justice, and specifically the calls for those other three officers who were there on the scene to be arrested and face charges. What is your timetable for making that decision, and how will you decide what charges, if any, they will face?
Well, we are, as I said, everything's back on the table. We are having a fresh review from what the county attorney has already done. We want to thank them for the work they've done, but we're looking at this case with fresh eyes. There is nobody who has culpability who will not be held accountable. And I just want to say that I can't comment on the evidence at this point. That would be unethical for a prosecutor to do. But I will say the public has an expectation that they will render assistance when necessary, that they will not add harm. Just saying it's not, I didn't know and I was following orders, I don't think is working for the public anymore. That's not a comment about the evidence or the law. It's a comment about where the public's mind is these days. And I think that, you know, that's just a reality that's out there.
How soon could we see charges?
Very soon. But again, I'm working on this case with a team, and they're telling me, hey, look, we're doing this as fast as we can. We are working expeditiously. We are not dawdling. We have cleared everything else off our calendar. And they're telling me that if I want a good job, I need to give them the time. But we're not talking too much longer, but I am very reluctant to give a hard deadline at this point.
All right. Well, we certainly appreciate your time with us this morning. Attorney General Keith Ellison, thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, everyone. George Stephanopoulos here. Thanks for checking out the ABC News YouTube channel. If you'd like to get more videos, show highlights, and watch live event coverage, click on the right over here to subscribe to our channel. And don't forget to download the ABC News app for breaking news alerts. Thanks for watching.
All right, today's podcast is titled sort of a continuation from yesterday, Black Men, the Police, and Cause and the Law of Cause and Effect. The majority of audios that we played on today's podcast, we went across the ocean, or the pond, whatever you want to call it, to Kenya and Africa, where you have, in Nairobi, you and other parts of Kenya, you have black men, African men. Well, you heard it. Don't kill the messenger. No pun intended. Where you have the police killing people that look just like them. But for some reason, like I think I mentioned it yesterday or before, one of our primary, well, not maybe not primary, but one of our industries here in the United States is we love to sell racism. Or an illusion of racism. If a black person kills a black person, not really news. If a white person kills a white person, not really news. If an Asian person kills an Asian person, not really news. If a Native American kills a Native American, not really news. And on a high-profile level, that's why I played all those audios from Kenya. African, black policemen, African because they consider themselves African, Kenyan policemen, who we would call black, have killed, well, like one guy said, it happens about every other day. But we don't, you know, I got calls last night from Australia and Southeast Asia this morning asking about what's going on over here. But it wouldn't be global news. It probably wouldn't even be local news or barely local news if it was the same race or same color incident. Now, that I'm just one person. That's just my opinion. To round up the audios for this morning, the independent autopsy came back. And official government autopsy was released yesterday, early evening, I guess, late afternoon or early evening. So they both rule homicide. So, in any event, let's go to the phone lines. 314, what say you?
Yeah, Ollie, how you doing?
I'm doing fine.
Did I email you something?
You could have, but I haven't checked that email account. I got a bunch of them. I haven't checked that Gmail account yet. Not today.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's the way things do over in those other countries. That's the way things go. They have their own set rules and policy. That's the way they do business. I've often said you think you got bad relationships with law enforcement here. Wait till you see what's going on in other countries that you talk about, people talk about going to.
Well, a lot of people, yeah. For instance, you have people that who, let's say, have never visited Africa before or visited any other place, and they really romanticize the place as utopia. But every place has got its own politics. Every place has got its own problems and issues. and
yeah,
what
like
a person is romanticizing, you might not like it when you get over to these places. You may like it. You might not like it. You don't know until you visit it, spend some time there. Because after listening to some of this audio this morning, I don't know if I want to go take a vacation over in Kenya. So, or if I
well,
do,
you know, these rides,
it'll be in some of the resort areas.
These rides that's going on in the U.S. would never have last got off the way they do here in the in some of those other countries. They deal with that type of thing a lot stringent.
Right.
And you know, you look at some of these little pockets, like these Latin Kings, they neighborhood. A video where some rider was trying to come over in their community, and they shot at them. Burnt the cars up, and I guess they said that wasn't going to happen. Of course, you had the same thing in some black communities, black neighborhoods, should I say, in Chicago, too. Rioters tried to come in there, and even some of the street gangs dealt with it how they had. You know, in Chicago, they had 82 shot, 22 fatalities in Chicago over this last weekend.
I did not know.
And you 82. Add that to what? Huh?
You said 82?
Yes.
Mm.
82 this weekend. And last Memorial Day weekend was 49. That's 131.
Mm.
With 32 dead.
Never a dull moment. That's for sure.
And I think for the year, I think they average like 4 or 5 a day so far this year.
Okay. I'm checking my email right now on my phone.
Well, I just found this. I just read this article. Now, these riots, these state governors, well, you got the police being put out there without any directive to stop anything, or they engaged. And the state governors are not utilizing the National Guard. And they're tearing up blacks. Businesses, especially in Atlanta. I mean,
well, there didn't Trump come out with something and said, if you don't do it, I will?
That's what he said. He's going to use the Insurrection Act.
Right. And I got to read what's happening because I think he bought them out in D.C. All right, I got the article you sent, exclusive. Yeah, new start turns to a tragic end for George Floyd, who moved to Minneapolis. Determined
yeah, he got something.
To turn
he got a lot of stuff
around
in
after
history.
Being released from a prison in Texas. Oh man, that's
but
rough.
You know what people say? Well, what are you bringing up the man's record for? That he was in adult new movies.
Mm. All right, George Floyd moved
well,
to
what
Minneapolis.
What did they do to?
2014 to get a fresh start after being released from prison in Houston, Texas, following an arrest for aggravated robbery. Floyd had turned his life around but died on Monday after a white officer knelt on his neck while arresting him for allegedly paying with a fake $20 bill. None of the officers could have been aware of Floyd's more than a decade-old criminal history at the time of his arrest.
Well, you know what went down on that arrest? You know they switch officers, don't you?
I did not know that.
They switch officers, and the ambulance looked as if it was waiting. The money that the counterfeit money he used was obvious. The ink was running. Why would he use that? And he went in twice with two different bills. I think it either the same bill or two different bills.
Okay. Let's see.
Why would you try to pass an obvious piece of phony money two times?
I have no idea. Well, Well, with this autopsy coming up, looks like the other three officers are going to be arrested. Well, you know what? Let's take a look at what happened in Baltimore with the Freddie Gray case. They arrested a number of officers there too, but didn't get not one conviction. What do you think will happen? I mean, just wild guess speculating. Because this case is more politicized than, in my opinion, thus far, than the Gray case.
Nothing's going to happen to him.
Think all four will get acquitted?
Well, police have immunity. They got legal immunity.
Seems like they do.
Well, they do. There's a law passed, and I forget what year it was. Prosecutors have immunity. You've heard of that, right?
Oh, your prosecutors. It's rare that they get in trouble for anything.
Police have what's called
there's a special type of immunity that they have. Hello? Okay, his light's still on. Dog on it. There's Blog Talk. Okay, well, oh man. My board frozen up. Okay, Blog Talk. All right, I guess you had enough for today. Well, we shall be back tomorrow. I think we might do trending topics tomorrow. What's today? Today's Tuesday. Okay. Trending topics. So, and on that note, it's lunchtime here. Everyone have a good rest of the day.